Well, yeah. Aaron, how it's been so long. Like, we've not touched base. So there's a lot to sort of pour over here. What's your overall on the Bills' status right now? They're one of the top favorites in the AFC for the Super Bowl. They and the Ravens. Like, that's unchanged. And as much as I respect the betting markets and the odds, I feel a little bit like there should be more respect given to the changes that have happened here. And I feel like assuming it's all just going to be full speed ahead because they've got 17, as much as I love him and respect his game, I don't know. I feel like there's just a little bit too much of shrugging off new system on defense and Joe Brady, first-time head coach. I don't know. What's your overall right now?
Yeah, I'm trying to find what the pulse is, right? Because everything I'm seeing, like you're saying, betting markets, national media, everyone still has the Bills as one of those top contenders in the AFC. But like locally, when you're talking to people, and I don't know if this is just us kind of becoming an entitled fan base in some ways of just, you know, they've been so good in the regular season, but it hasn't led to the success people have wanted. So, you know, it's kind of a, oh, I'll believe it when I see it type of mentality from the fan base. But the excitement doesn't feel like it normally does this many weeks out from training camp, right? Like it has in the past. And so that's a weird thing I'm trying to wrap my head around. And I think it's probably somewhere in the middle of the local vibe I'm getting and the national vibe. I think you're right. There's a lot of questions. I think many in the national media are just assuming because Joe Brady was here and the offense was really good, that is going to stay intact. But him becoming a head coach is a big unknown, right? We know whatever you want to say about Sean McDermott, you could go back through many seasons, whether it was, you know, all the COVID stuff, DeMar Hamlin, having to move games in the middle of the season. Something sort of always came up where you needed that type of leadership that I think he provided. And that's an unknown in this Joe Brady era, is the marathon of the season. Like, I know he's a good offensive mind. I think the guys like him and they'll rally around him. But there's another element of leading a group of men that we just don't know how he's going to handle it. And I think the same is true on Jim Leonard, who I'm a little bit more excited about as a defensive coordinator than I am about Joe Brady as a head coach. And there's still a lot of unknown, right? Like, he wasn't the defensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos. And I think we all point to how good that defense was and kind of associate that with Jim Leonard. And while I like Jim Leonard, I like what he did at Wisconsin, I think he's a bright young mind, I don't think this is going to be the iteration of the Jim Leonard defense that necessarily he wants. It won't be a right. finished product in the first year because these aren't all his guys, right? He's using pieces and parts from a previous defense that he has to kind of morph into maybe something that isn't his preferred style of defense because he doesn't have all the guys to run exactly how he would want to. So I think there will be some growing pains, but I don't think that should stop anyone from being excited. You said it. You still have 17. You still have a lot of, you still have James Cook, one of the best running backs in football. You still have one of the better offensive lines in football. I like the skill position room. There are talented players on the defensive side of the ball that I think scheme could get a little bit more out of than we've seen in the last couple of years from the Sean McDermott era. So there's things to be excited about, but kind of just trying to feel out where yeah. this team's going to be, man.
You use the word morph there, and that's a big, the fact that you've got, I think, I know Landon Jackson put on weight. I think I've read about Deion Walker dropping weight, and like, I don't know, when I get to like, I'm changing guys' bodies, like they did this with AJ Epenesa, I feel like twice, right? Was he light when he got here and they wanted him to be heavy, and then they said, no, you should actually go back to light, or vice versa, whatever that was. Whenever you get into that, I just, look, anything can work, and maybe both of those guys will be important pieces here. Jackson had a lost year, basically. Walker, I thought, was a guy that might have even salvaged the whole draft class with how well he played. And so I think the arrow is pointing up on him, but when you're asking guys to alter their bodies, I worry about in one off season that's where I go, okay, do I have the guys I need here, or is this going to be a work in progress? The best I can do to get, because I also like the Leonard hire. It was certainly one of the guys that was at or near the top of the list in my mind going into the process. So I'm glad that they reeled him in. Maybe the most optimistic I can get about it, if you know, you share a concern like I do about the personnel and whether they've got the right pieces or not, is that maybe that gets figured out as the year goes on, and he figures out how to use different guys in different ways or whatever, and maybe they're really running hot by the time we get to the end, and that's what matters the most.
Yeah, the first point, I do agree with you. The PR stuff of the spring where it's like, oh, so-and-so comes in looking so big or he gained this weight. You can put weight on a mediocre player. It's not going to make them an elite player, right? Like, there's still some things. Landon Jackson specifically, that type of athletic frame, he's not super bendy. Like, he doesn't have the type of athleticism that I like. And I know people kind of want to kick him in, and he's done some of that stuff in the past, and maybe the size will help. But to me, that's a guy fighting for a roster spot, right? Like, he's trying to find a way to cling to a roster spot. And I think, you know, a Dwayne Carter is another example of that, a guy that's putting on weight, trying to find a way to stay on a roster. But in terms of the other guys, and I know on the defensive line and even in the linebacker room, there's some questions on the fits and the types for in this transition to all the talk about a 3-4 in the Jim Leonard defense. But the thing that gives me at least optimism of this is the type of coach that I've seen Jim Leonard be when he was in Wisconsin, and what we know of him from his time in Denver and just some of the clinics you can watch. One of my biggest frustrations of the Sean McDermott era, as much as I like Sean McDermott and the success this team had, it felt like he often wanted players to kind of fit the mold of his scheme. And I think Jim Leonard's a little bit the opposite, where he does have an idealistic version of what the scheme should be, in his opinion, but he's going to put players in a position to be successful. So I think he'll bend his scheme more to the talent that's in the room, where Sean McDermott was so into his own scheme at times that I don't know that he always fit it to the players that he had. He didn't always work with the ingredients list that he was given to do it the right way. He just expected those guys to play their 1 of 11 within the scheme. And I think Leonard will be a little bit more freestyle, if you will, especially in this first year where he doesn't have all the fits that he would like.
I'm glad you mentioned Dwayne Carter, because I think I've made this mistake at least one other time. I think I'm confusing him and Deion Walker. Carter I read about putting on weight too, like Jackson, and I think I made the thing about Walker up. It's in the wrong shelf in my brain, I think. So I'm glad, I think we got that corrected. Aaron Quinn from Cover One on the West Hur Hotline with us. How do you think overall they'll do as far as pass rush goes? I mean, we've seen the addition of Bradley Chubb and the draft pick of TJ Parker. I think if they get any kind of a boost in pass rush, it's not so much going to be like that somebody goes and gets 12 or 15 sacks, but I think the scheme might just generate more pressure, and like overall they may just get more sacks. But I'm not sure they have still a hellraiser there unless Rousseau is freed up with the new position.
Yeah, it's this is going to be a very interesting thing to see, because I actually think the pass rush itself wasn't as bad as it felt. The problem with Sean McDermott and this defense was that it never came through in the big games and the big moments that you needed the pass rush to come through. So you had some statistics that looked okay for the regular season, but in the big moments, that pass rush wasn't able to generate the type of pressure you need against the elite teams and the elite quarterbacks. Where I think Jim Leonard is going to do that with scheme. I am a little bit worried about the personnel in terms of just a guy that can line up and win one-on-one consistently. I don't know that they have that type of pass rusher. That's kind of was my disappointment in the TJ Parker pick. I'm hoping he proves me wrong, that he can be a guy that can win some of that one-on-one. He doesn't necessarily win in the way that I like to see edges win, and that's something this spring I've been going through is, you know, the Bills aren't going to probably go get that bendy, super athletic edge that I'm looking for in terms of, like, the aesthetic of an end. But that doesn't mean these guys can't win and get pressure, right? There's plenty of different types of guys, and they all win in different ways. Last year, I got a little bit killed because I was, this time of year, I was super high on Greg Rousseau, and I thought he was going to ascend into a top 15 type defensive end. And I think he played really well. I really do. I think he still is on the cusp, and he had some big moments as the season wound down. He didn't quite get to where I thought his ceiling could get to. That doesn't mean he's not going to. I think he could still do that this year. But you didn't pair him with the type of guy that I think makes him a better pass rusher. You paired him with a guy that's almost a mirror image of him and Bradley Chubb. And so I'm interested to see how they're able to generate, you know, if they just line up guys on the line, are they able to generate pass rush? Or is this something that Jim Leonard's going to have to bring some delayed pressures, bring some creepers, bring some different looks, bring a safety down into the box and blitzing Dorian Williams, right? And trying to generate pressure through scheme. And I do think that, again, is the thing that gives me optimism to maybe throw a little bit more at some of these elite quarterbacks in those big moments, is Jim Leonard isn't scared to kind of get a little bit ballsy with the blitz packages and do some more creeper stuff that at times Sean McDermott kind of, again, leaned back into the scheme and, hey, we'll just play our coverage and rush four and hope that that works. I don't think you'll get that type of thing from Leonard. I think he'll be more aggressive trying to create that pressure.
How do you like the back end? I'll skip the middle for now because the linebacking core might be a little sketchy at this point. Sure. I was talking with Nate Geary about this yesterday, and you just the secondary, I wonder if they might not sort of be back to being a strength of the team. I really like Bishop, and I think he's someone who took a step last year, and if there's another step, that could be really good. Even if he just plateaus, I still think you've got a very good player there. I'm very excited and intrigued by C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and I wonder. I've told Sal this a few times. Like I haven't gotten anybody, to take my action, but I might bet that IGB beats out Maxwell Hairston.
That's interesting. Something Greg and I kind of were talking about a little bit yesterday. We did our linebacker show, but we were kind of talking like, there is so many unknowns, right? Like, we assume maybe certain guys in the linebacker room, like a Dorian Williams or a Max Hairston, you know, in that Sean McDermott era, the vets that were established, even if they weren't that good, even if they were just mediocre, sort of had a leg up going into camp on maybe some of the new additions, right? And those guys had to earn their way into those spots. It's a clean slate for a lot of these guys. So they are invested in a Max Hairston, right? But that doesn't mean that he's guaranteed a job in this defense. But I will say that back end might be the thing I'm most excited about with this Jim Leonard defense. Obviously, he cut his teeth in the league on the back end. Yep. I think he's done incredible things both at Wisconsin and in the Broncos with some of the players on the back end of defenses. I think the player that's probably going to benefit the most from Jim Leonard is Cole Bishop. I am expecting a huge leap forward. Last year was a fantastic foundation for him. I think that's his floor, which is absolutely great. I think the Bills are going to have a long-term safety answer there as a floor. And then you said it, adding a guy like C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I didn't like that last year when people wanted the trade for the Sean McDermott defense. I didn't like him as a fit in the Sean McDermott defense. I didn't think that was a good fit at all. In the Jim Leonard defense, I absolutely really love this next to Cole Bishop. I think there's a lot of things you can do with the two of those guys. And I think a guy that's going to be really sneaky as a utility weapon in this defense is Jalen Kilgore. I absolutely loved that draft pick. I hope I'm not getting a little bit too ahead of myself on the excitement of him, because he is still a draft pick. He is going to have to develop. But I think the Bills are in a great position. They have two starting caliber safeties, so they don't need him to come in and be a starting safety right away. They have the nickel sort of figured out as well, I think. I think they can really put him in as that hybrid piece that the NFL is starting to kind of go towards, which might help with the other conversation that we'll have here at the linebacker position, some of these hybrid type guys that they have on that back end. So I like a lot of the pieces. And if you go back and watch some of the Wisconsin film, especially on third downs, right? Third down was a big issue last year for the Buffalo Bills. If it was third and 10 or more, it was almost a guarantee the other team was going to pick that up. Go back and watch the Rose Bowl, Wisconsin versus Oregon. Justin Herbert, Jim Leonard put on an absolute clinic on third downs. And I know that's college and it might not translate to the NFL, but just the type of looks and adding defensive backs to the field, and you don't know where guys are coming from. You don't know who's in, who's down, who's up. That's the kind of stuff that just tricks quarterbacks. And we just haven't seen anything like that in Buffalo. So I'm really excited about this back end group. And I know there was a lot of conversation about Christian Benford this past week because of Jeremy Fowler's executive scouts report, and he didn't get in that top 10. I'm okay with that. If you want to stack chips on Christian Benford's shoulder, please, by all means. I think he's a top end player, and all the defensive guys that I've talked to, you know, he might have trended a little bit down last year from previous years, but I'm still buying stock on Christian Benford.
I'm glad you mentioned Kilgore. You heard me make a sound. I definitely do this, like you're saying, like, oh, I hope I'm not just getting carried away. It happens to me. I since Kyle Hamilton showed up. I wanted Emin Wurrie two drafts ago and see what he's done in Seattle. And Kilgore is not that guy, like athletic profile-wise entirely, but a joker-type guy that I'm just going to move. Oh, is he playing safety? Is he playing slot corner? Is he playing linebacker? Like, where is he? I love having a guy that you can use like that. I always get lost in it, and I do think the trend in the league is toward that sort of player. So hopefully Leonard has plans for him.
You know who's another sneaky guy that kind of fits that mold a little bit, and I think they misused him under McDermott, is I think Jordan Hancock can be another one of those type of guys that can be a weapon. I don't think he's a true safety, and so when they lined him up to play safety, I think that wasn't a benefit to him. I think he's a guy that can be almost like what Cam Lewis was, but I think better. So both those guys are young, good players that I'm excited that a creative mind like Jim Leonard, who has a background as a defensive back, is going to utilize to their fullest potential.
All right, so linebacker. I don't know how much time you want to spend here, but Bernard shook me up last year. I loved him coming in, replacing Edmonds, and we saw like splash plays right away, and like, okay, that's our guy, but he's so undersized, and I feel like he's taken a beating, and I just wonder if, you know, that hasn't cost him some of his speed and explosiveness.
It could. I don't know. You definitely could see the injury was impactful a year ago, right? And I think that he even kind of mentioned trying to play through some of that stuff almost to, a detriment to the team, which isn't good. He sort of talked about that this year. I am expecting, if healthy, that he's going to fit this defense actually really well. I think Jim Leonard's, while it isn't replicated from like a Baylor defense, it's got some elements of what he was doing in Baylor. So I think he's going to have a good feel for this defense. I still think he's a playmaker. I think this is a guy that you want to get out in space to go make plays on the ball, and I think that Jim Leonard's going to try to utilize that. And even as a pass rusher, it was some of those different creeper pressures, different thing looks like that, I think that he's going to be impactful there. It's the matter of, do you think Terrell Bernard can stay healthy? I have a tough time with this one Bulldog. I tend not to believe in injury prone. I know some guys go through bouts in their careers where they definitely stack up some injuries, and he's kind of right on the cusp of being one of those guys that stacked up a couple injuries here recently and starting to get that label. This is a big year for him to prove it. There's a few guys like that on the Bills roster, but this will be a big one for him to prove it, because I think this room of the linebacker room really revolves around him, right? I think we can talk about Dorian Williams or Elam Ward another linebacker, but Terrell Bernard's going to be the one that really kind of stirs the drink in the middle of that defense.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Elam Ward, like I don't want to assume he's a fourth-round pick. Maybe he can show up and outplay Williams and get on the field, and it'll be a strength for them. But it feels a little bit risky to me to assume that.
Yeah, he's a freak athlete, so I understand fans clamoring for it. And obviously, the way Jim Leonard spoke about him, granted, Dorian Williams wasn't in those activities early on in this part of the season, so he did jump him in those things and was taking reps with the starters. So I understand fans are excited. I actually hearkened back to when Matt Milano was drafted on the show the other night and the Ramon Humber situation, right? Ramon Humber, I think, was the starter for about six, seven, because I'll get killed by my kids, but 6 or 7 weeks here that season, and Matt Milano started to come in and become the starter. I could see a situation play out where Dorian Williams is the starter to start the year. He's still a good player. I know people are down on him, but I think he's a fine football player and can play that weak side good enough at a mediocre level. But he's a high-end special teams player, so he's going to earn himself a spot here. And then as the season goes on, I could see maybe the rookie taking over some of those reps as you get into the postseason.
I think the show is going to need to be pulled over, Aaron, because we've just spent 20 minutes talking about the Bills and have not talked about the offense at all. Just entirely on the defensive
side. Well, we know what to expect, you know, right?
Well, let me ask you about DJ Moore's ceiling. That, and then I want a quick take from you on if you're at all interested in Brandon Cooks or anyone else for that matter, but that's the name that's certainly out there. What about Moore? Do you think we're talking about a 1,000, 1,100-yard guy, or do you think the Bills have forgotten how to feed a number one receiver?
So this was an interesting one, because when Greg and I were doing kind of like our wish list and free agent shows and stuff, I had my eyes on Moore, and in talking to Greg a little bit, we were kind of like, man, I don't see how Brandon Bean can pull off a move like this. That's a big contract. I don't know where he gets the money to kind of make this deal happen. And it was like 2 weeks later, he makes the deal happen. And I love the player. So that was kind of my take was, hey, I think this is too expensive. And I know a lot of people probably still felt that way. Even today, they feel it's too expensive. But the player itself, if you take away the compensation, I love the fit. I love the player. I think he's super underrated in terms of the national media. I think it was Ryan Clark talking about why the Broncos were better because they added Jaylen Waddle. I think DJ Moore is just as good as Jaylen Waddle without the injury history, right? Like, he plays through those things. So I think he's a great fit. I think Josh Allen is dying for a guy that he can rely on and feed. So I do think he'll get targets. But more importantly, Bulldog, I think this is finally an opportunity for them to have a guy that pulls some real gravity away. So even if he's not getting huge numbers in production, defensive coordinators are going to want to know where DJ Moore is on the field because he can be played inside. He can go outside and win. You're going to have to know where he is. And I think that opens up stuff for Khalil Shakir in the middle of the field. I think that was a struggle for Shakir, and especially when Kincaid wasn't on the field last year. You didn't have anyone really threatening the defense in a way where they could, you know, pull some attention away from the middle of the field in that seam. I think that DJ Moore is going to pull some of that attention, and it's going to open up things for a guy like Dalton Kincaid and for a guy like Khalil Shakir. So, again, even if he's not incredibly productive or his production continues to dip as his career ages out, I think just his presence on the field as a legitimate threat to be a number one type wide receiver or a low-end one is a huge benefit for this Bills team.
And a quick take on Brandon Cooks before you sail off into your weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Brandon Cooks. And again, in free agency, he was one of those guys where if the draft didn't work out the way you wanted, sure, bring in Brandon Cooks to compete. I don't see a spot for him on the roster as it stands outside of practice squad unless you were able to convince some team to take on Joshua Palmer's contract in a trade or maybe trade Keon Coleman if that was somehow available. Mm-hmm. But if Keon and Palmer are both on this roster, I just don't see where you bring in a guy at Cook's age with his declining skill, even though I liked the way he brought last year, he's not playing special teams, right? So you can't have a lot of those guys that are just sitting as your wide receiver five aren't really playing. The only path I can see as the roster stands now is if he's willing to hang out as a practice squad guy who's willing to be called up in case of emergency.
You might need to sign him before you do any of that, though. I wonder, like, if he's eager to get to camp. I thought it was interesting in the Tim Graham Athletic piece.
He did, yeah.
That he wants to go to camp. Like, without having read that, I'm glad that Tim, you know, got that information because I would have sat in here going, he'll probably just wait until mid-August. But it sounds to me like that dude wants to go put the time in. So,
I mean, if he wants to get into the Bills camp and not have anything guaranteed to him, I would absolutely throw him in there because injuries are going to happen. He is a good player. He's a good vet. I'd like him to, you know, a guy like Skylar Bell would benefit a ton from having a guy like that in the room. So I'm all for it. I don't know if he would find a way to crack that active roster unless an injury or a trade occurred.
Yep. All right, Aaron. Excellent job as always. Enjoyed the visit very much. Where are we finding all of the stuff?
Yeah, man, Cover One, go to YouTube, find us, join us at coverone.net/onepass. We're doing a lot of stuff. Our buddy Anthony Prasco was just on ESPN the other day, but
I saw he was on Mina Kimes' show, right?
Yeah.
That's great. Good for you guys, man. I really like her work a lot, and that's an excellent landing spot, man. That's really
cool.
She's
fantastic, and she shouted out the network. So, check us out on YouTube if you haven't yet. Give us a like. We're out there working hard. This is a tough time of year, as you know, Bulldog, to talk about football when not a whole lot's going on. So, well, all the support we can get, we appreciate.
Well, I appreciate you helping me do exactly that for the last 20 minutes or so, buddy. All right, have a great weekend, and we'll catch up.
All right, take care. Enjoy vacation, bud.
All right. That's Aaron Quinn from Cover One on the West Her Hotline with us. Excellent work they do. 803-0550. Anything there you want to get into? I'll certainly share some thoughts on, well, mostly where we ended, go figure, on the receiving corps. We'll get to that. But certainly anything else goes if you're up for it.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
There's one chip and only one chip for the guacamole. That's that Cantina Gold, thick in the yellow bag.
Mm-hmm. It's Mike Shope.
No thin crisp, no scoops. Get out of here with hint of lime. Horrendous choice.
And the Bulldog.
The lime is just too much lime. There's lime in the guacamole. Any more lime is too much lime. You're crossing the line. You've crossed the line. If you're using hint of lime in the guacamole with the lime, you've crossed the line.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
I'm going to talk to HR because I don't feel like that open equally represents my position on the matter.
Yeah, it's very one-sided.
I think I should, not to make light of HR. I'm trying to be cute. Anyway, glad to have you with us here on a hot Thursday. Maybe thunderstorms in the area. Anyway, head on a swivel out there. Nate Geary in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog. Happy to welcome back to the show our old friend Mike Tenier, co-founder of Two Deep Zone, formerly of Football Outsiders, the New York Times, the Messenger, Bleacher Report, and other ancient empires, although the Blue Sky bio is a little bit different. Mike, it's nice to talk to you again, and I feel like we got to make an effort to make sure we do this during the season, because I'm having flashbacks to being in here while Mike is on vacation and Nate is here and talking to you like 5 years in a row, I feel like. I don't know. Anyway, it's nice to talk to you again, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is sort of like the sign of summer here. It's like the 4th of July ends, and you guys call me up, and it's time to talk Bills training camp again.
Right. We're a little early for that, but still, we are here. How are things, man? How's Two Deep Zone going? I assume you still contributed to the Almanac, the FTN joint now. How's everything going? You keeping busy?
Oh, I'm keeping very busy. And yes, I contributed 8 chapters, not the Bills chapter, but NFC East and NFC West chapters to the Football Outsiders Almanac, now the FTN Almanac. And that is on sale now. You can go to FTNFantasy.com and download it. It's tons and tons of work on my part, work on Aaron Schatz's part, and stats, information, jokes, scouting, everything you could ask for to get ready for the NFL season.
Well, in an ever-changing world, we know we can always count on that almanac, which is produced by humans like yourself and Aaron and lots of others. So cheers on that. So my guy Nate here an hour or so ago said something that I thought was pretty interesting, and then we had a clip of Booger McFarland from ESPN basically saying the same thing, that he thinks and Nate thinks – I should let Nate tell you, right? Anyway, he's sitting right here, but he's busy watching soccer. The Bills have more pressure, the most pressure of any team in the league on them this year. How does that land on you?
I think that's the case, and it might be something we said last July. It's that nothing except good health matters in training camp. Nothing matters in September. Nothing matters in October. The season begins in January. You know, there is no, hey, this team went 11-6. Wasn't that a win? No, that's not a win. The Super Bowl is the win, and that's been persistent. It's been every year. If anything, the pressure is increased. It's now increasing on Joe Brady instead of Sean McDermott. It's increasing, I suppose, on Josh Allen, although I think he's immune to some of this. But everybody else on that roster, it's win or go home. And all the work that they're doing now, no matter how good it looks, the grades don't come in until they're on top of the AFC East, or they're on top of the first round bye in the playoffs, and they're getting themselves in position for that Super Bowl.
Schedule, difficult, new faces, young coaches, a first-time NFL play caller on the defensive side of the ball, a first-time head coach in Joe Brady. They're certainly, Mike, I mean, they at least Brandon Bean has shown, like, okay, this isn't good enough. We're going to kind of flip it on its head here. What was your ultimate, like, what did you sort of think of the move to fire Sean McDermott? I thought it was time. I made a joke earlier. We were talking just about, like, kind of all of the factors of them losing last year when you don't have a Patrick Mahomes and you don't have a Joe Burrow or a Lamar Jackson. And it kind of sort of felt like that was their biggest blown opportunity and maybe the biggest reason why McDermott's gone. But your thoughts of the move to finally make the move on McDermott and what sort of your thoughts are on the new head coach, Joe Brady?
Did anyone say Brandon Bean isn't good enough? Let's turn you on your head.
Lots of us.
A couple, one or two of us. Yeah. One or two. Yeah.
That was my question: is like who's watching the Watchmen here? Where you know Sean McDermott and only Sean McDermott wasn't good enough, but Bean and Brady, they can be promoted. That's what, you know, gets the antenna up when you're somebody who watches the whole league, where you look at the Bills' relative failures. I'm going to say relative failures because of what you said. Obviously, this is a playoff team. They were not good enough last year. They were not. They, you know, they let the Patriots catch up on them. They did not take the opportunity when they had, when the Chiefs and the Ravens fell short. But I think that that failure landed on the heads of McDermott and Bean and Brady and everyone. So the fact that it turned into more of a palace coup, that was kind of eye-opening, you know, and a lot of good things are being said about Jim Leonard. I'm you know, impressed generally from Jim Leonard, the work he did in the Broncos, et cetera. It was either time for continuity or time for change. I don't think they really did the continuity right or did the change right. I think this was an opportunity for some of the people in the front office there and in the coaching staff to kind of assess blame to somebody else and then feather their own nest.
And, Mike, I mean, I'm not going to speak for Terry Pegula and the Bills ownership team that ultimately made the decision, but I think if you want to look at this from a playing board, right, which is I think they wanted and felt they needed to make a shift defensively from the culture and the scheme that was, you know, largely like just the bend but don't break and that worked in the regular season but not in the postseason. What we heard a lot of in terms of why Brandon Bean was here, still here, and not Sean McDermott was that they had been sinking a lot of assets in the defense and that there was more, you know, of this, well, he doesn't think he has a good enough roster, but, you know, Terry Pegula and Brandon Bean, they think they do. We've been giving you lots. You're not, you know, we're giving you the brush, buddy. Make us art. And I'm wondering.
Please don't take me back to the news conference. Conference.
Sorry.
I tried to move on.
I digress. Can you get there? Like, with all of that said, like, can you get to the place where, okay, all this makes sense and maybe this was the right move?
Yeah, we sunk a lot of assets into the defense, but, you know, Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid and the 10 different receivers we would bring in, you know, during the season to make these plays. That's a little bit of a self-serving agitprop on the people who survived. The people who lived to write the history wrote that history. I get the idea that McDermott's defense was getting stale. There was this issue where he was sort of defensive play caller and, you know, coordinator and a head coach and things like that. That probably wasn't the best move. So if you say, well, it's time to get rid of McDermott, that makes sense. Yeah, we all have questions about how that offense was run, too. We all have questions about Brady's system, the development of the players there. So why was only the McDermott problem addressed? And we can talk about how drafts have been handled, some of the decisions they made in terms of, you know, what they did at wide receiver, et cetera. Why was only one person held accountable? It's impossible to turn around from that and not look at it with a little bit of a side eye and suspicion based on who survived, who profited, and who was let go.
So how realistic is it to you that they can meet this pressure if they are indeed the team in the NFL with the most pressure on them and, I don't know, improve on winning 12 games a year, which is basically what, you know, mostly what they've done, not every year, but, you know, plenty of times. They have never had the one seed. That would be an improvement. Can they do all that in a season with all this change? Because some of the change we hope is, well, we hope all of it's going to be positive, of course, Mike, but DJ Moore specifically is a piece they have not had on offense since they divested themselves of Stephon Diggs two off seasons ago.
Right, and that's somebody that they've tried to replace from within through the draft. They haven't been able to do it, but you know, absolutely, they can meet this pressure. I'm looking at the FTN Almanac projections right now. They have the second highest projection in the AFC. I'll leave you guys to guess if you want to who's first in the AFC. But they are substantially ahead in terms of projections of the Patriots, who are further down on that list. And of course, the Dolphins and the Jets are kind of like a dispensary of victories for both of those teams, the way the projections work. So once you get there, then you're putting yourself in the group. So they're ahead of the Chiefs projection-wise. They're ahead of the Ravens projection-wise. Again, there's only one team ahead of them. Would you like to guess who's ahead of them in the projections?
I'm going to guess that it's Jacksonville.
Incorrect. You're close from the conference division standpoint.
Houston, then, it must be, right?
It is the Houston Texans, whose defense is considered to be so dominant, they get a little bounce back from their offense, and suddenly they're slaughtering everything in their wake, and their schedule is much easier than the Bills. So, yeah, this is another chance. Josh Allen gives them another chance. James Cook gives them another chance. Offensive line, the veterans on defense, et cetera. They're there. They can meet that pressure in 2026.
How much does the uneven season DJ Moore had last year while the Bears were mostly breaking through, recognizing that Caleb Williams was far from a perfect player last year, but there's certainly big strides were made all around there with Ben Johnson, but DJ Moore was the guy that kind of fell through the cracks. Is that how alarming is that? And are you confident that he bounces back to what he had been, prior to that in his career, which was a pretty regular 1,000-yard receiver?
Regular 1,000-yard receiver. We're on three successive years of his yardage totals dropping. Okay, and that's a little bit of a flag. Another thing, a little bit of a flag is his best seasons often lined up with sort of chaos on offense, whether it was the Panthers or with the Bears, where you kind of got the impression where this was the guy who was the safety valve, the binky for your Justin Fields's, for your guys like that. Now, he could be that for Josh Allen potentially, but I'm a worry there. And the other red flag is, the Bears seem to be ascending, and part of their ascendance was, we don't need DJ Moore anymore. Right. We got Luther Burden. We got these tight ends. We have Roma Adunze. This is a team that should be like, hey, we're all in. And instead, like, hey, we're going to make this guy available. I don't think he's the Stephon Diggs you're seeking. I think he's going to help. But this is going to be another year of Bills receiver by committee. And that's okay. But we keep seeing Bills receiver by committee with Joe Brady in charge of it. We keep seeing this, and we keep seeing it not being the thing that launches Josh Allen to the stratosphere, so to speak. So that's one more worry. I think he helps. I think he's a good addition. I think there needs to be more at wide receiver.
So, Mike, talking about a little bit of like the Joe Brady system, it's funny because Bulldog and I were sort of laughing about the fact that we haven't heard the term, everybody eats, which was like a fun, cute little thing in year one. And then last year it was like, the stepbrother scene where now the suits sort of seem bleeped up, and now it's like, I think we all got sort of sick of the everybody eats thing. And it's not lost on me that they still have, on their roster, the league's leading rusher last year, and they had some movement on the offensive line. But Aaron Kromer leaving, who was kind of the architect of that run game, I wonder kind of what your thoughts are about when you have the offensive coordinator, pass game coordinator calling plays, and then the other guy kind of architecting but calling the run plays. Mm-hmm. How much in your kind of experience, I know you've watched more football than I will have forgotten in my life, but like how much of that do you think changes? How different does their run game look without a guy that I think was so, integral to like what they were doing in their offensive, their running attack?
It can make a big difference. In a lot of teams, the offensive coordinator is pretty much de facto passing game coordinator. These guys make their money designing pass plays. And then if there's not a run game coordinator, the offensive line coach is often the person doing that. And sometimes that they do bring some secret sauce to that particular equation. I'm thinking of Jeff Southland here in Philly. He retired from the Eagles, and suddenly the running game was not the same. It's a matter of installation. It's a matter of sort of like the nuts and bolts of the design of things. I wouldn't put that up as a red flag, but you're kind of getting back to it with Brady. It's like, okay, well, what worked for the Bills last year? Well, the running game, because Cook and the offensive line were very good, and Allen contributes to the running game, and the backup running backs were good. Okay, well, who left? That's a running game coordinator. That's not ideal. They can promote from within. I don't even know who their running game coordinator is right now, to be frank. But that isn't a sign that the Bills were optimizing things based on who was succeeding and who was failing. It's more of a, who gets fed, so to speak, who gets promoted during the course of this little power struggle that happened in January.
As Nate was asking the question that you just answered, I realize why I always think to look you up when Nate is in here filling in for Mike, because he speaks your language in a way that I just don't. you guys, Mike Tenier, our guest here on the Western Hotline. You can find his work at a Substack, Two Deep Zone, also a contributor to the FTN Football Almanac with our buddy Aaron Schatz. How about the run game as the focus for this team? Do you see, like, I've given the Bills credit, Mike, over the years here for sort of maybe being ahead of the wave, ahead of the curve on we're going to have to lean into the run game because defenses are just taking away the explosive passing game. And you know, the Bills, I think, capitalized on that and had, you know, a fantastic couple of seasons really running the ball. I wonder with the change, with no longer a defensive-minded head coach, and Brady's relationship with Allen and being the play caller and the head coach and not really having, you know, a head coach to answer to anymore, whether or not they – and this point that Nate makes about Kromer leaving and that you, you know, substantiate. Yeah. Do they lean more into a passing game piloted by Josh Allen, and is that a good idea?
Well, again, if you're facing the Jets or Dolphins – or some of the weaker opponents, you should just jam the ball down their throats. I know there were a couple of times last year, I don't remember the specific games, I'm watching Bills games, and I'm like, will you please stop toying with your food in the first quarter and the second quarter? Get two tight ends and just run the ball against this team, and then when they come up, let Josh and Allen make a play, get the 14-0, and just end this game quickly. And there was sort of this weird need to get everybody involved early in the game, and next thing you know, it's close against, I think the Buccaneers was one of them.
Yeah.
It might have been the Saints was one of them, was early, if I remember. So you want your running game to be there when you are the superior team, which is going to happen a couple of times for the Bills, and you want it there to clean up your victories. After that, you want balance. So is Brady going to embrace that now that he doesn't have McDermott over his shoulder saying, I'm a defense coach, do it this way? I don't know. You got Josh Allen. It's not you can air it out, and it should be okay. It just was frustrating at times, and not as a Bills fan, just as a viewer, saying this should not be close right now because you should do what the Rams do, which is go heavy and just be like, we can dominate you. We can win this game at any time. Take the lead and go. So let's see if they do that this year.
Let me put a bow on the Joe Brady conversation with this sort of question to you. Pete Carmichael ends up coming over as the team offensive coordinator. He's not going to call plays, but I'm starting to lean into the idea, Mike, that, like, you know, Brady has some experience in the Sean Payton system, and now Pete Carmichael's here, and maybe that's just to shadow everything that you want a veteran guy when you're a first-time head coach, and especially somebody you trust. If I were to tell you right now today that the Bills would look more to the Sean Payton principles of offense, that both in the running game, using the running backs more in the pass game, and a lot of the, you know, like what we know from Drew Brees to be, right? And those Marquise Colston and the big years that those offenses had. If I were to tell you today that that is who Joe Brady pictured this offense leaning into, would you say that that is the right move for the personnel, or are you kind of thinking that, like, that's maybe a little too nostalgic and isn't something that you think would work properly or work well in this with this group of players?
You know, it's a little bit of both, because Carmichael was there. He was Peyton's right-hand man forever. I think it was, 2 years ago, he was still Peyton's right-hand man. And with this personnel, those old Saints teams were kind of like, we don't really have a wide receiver one. We have a couple of possession guys, a couple of vertical guys. We rotate our receivers. It can see the logic behind that. Allen isn't Breeze, but he's bigger and stronger and can run, and Breeze can do those things, so he can do a lot of the same things. That's part of it. I guess my question is, well, where has that been for the rest of Brady's NFL career as coordinator? And now he's a Sean Payton guy. It's like, wait, I thought he was, you know, a Panthers guy. I thought he was an LSU guy. So it's a little chameleon. Like, yeah, Carmichael brings that in. But maybe it's not so much nostalgic as we're connecting the dots now. And we're going back to, hey, these guys were doing this like 8 years ago. Maybe that's it. I need to see it on the field to believe it.
You mentioned in passing, looking at the FTN chapter, the Almanac chapter on the Bills and projections. Where are you at on Dalton Kincaid? Because this is a somewhat confounding player. He seems extremely productive when used, but his usage doesn't really line up with what his product, you know, with the quality that he is. Maybe that's a pitch count health wise. I sense that it has been the last couple of years. So tough one to handicap because you don't know what the condition of his knees are going to be, I guess. But where are you at on Kincaid?
Well, he was really good in the playoffs. When we last saw him, I know he was playing very well there. And I'm actually looking up his game logs. Like, wow, boom or bust. I know injuries were part of it, and I know he blew up in a couple of games, and then he just disappeared. And I can't think, I can't imagine the injuries have all to do with that. And I know Knox was involved. You have Jackson Howes. This is a team that wants to go two wide receivers, wants to go three tight ends. Get all of these guys involved. So, I mean, I don't know. I haven't been following Kincaid's like health status recently. It's another one of those questions about the offense. I would say that's another one of these questions. You know, only one guy had more than 40 catches last year. Only I think Shakir had more than that. You say everybody's feeding. Not everybody's feeding. A lot of people are going hungry right now, and Cook is feeding, and I guess Shakir was feeding, and that was it. And that's another question that's got to be answered. Kincaid is supposed to be the de facto like possession guy in this offense. We haven't seen it in the last 2 years. I think we need to see it.
Something that has struck me over the last couple of days, and Nate and I have talked a little bit about this today already, Mike, is how much the landscape has shifted in the AFC. For years, we would talk at this time of the year with you, and it'd be the Bills, the Ravens, and the Chiefs, and like the Bengals might take a turn. Miami had a hot minute when they scored 70 on Denver, and they were ahead of the Bills for most of that one season, but the Bills nipped them at the wire, whatever. But it feels like the hierarchy, it's not so much that the Bills, Ravens, and Chiefs have been toppled, but I feel like maybe they've come back a little bit and the rest of the pack has risen up.
That's kind of it. The analogy I use is everybody went into pit row last year. You know, the Chiefs had to go into pit row because they had a flat tire, and the Ravens had to go into pit row, and the Bills kind of went into pit row a little bit because they have the coaching change. And now they're coming out. And while they're coming out, it's like, oh, it appears that the Texans and the Patriots and the Broncos are now ahead of us. And the question becomes, well, is that just temporary? Are we about to slip past them, or are they going to have to enter pit row, or how's that going to go? So, yeah, it's a much harder conference to prognosticate. I look at this big Texans number here for a projection, and I say, I know their defense is good, but do I really see, you know, 12 wins, 13 wins, first round bye? I don't see it. You start looking at teams like the Steelers, and you're like, are they good? Or the Jaguars. What are they right now? The Broncos, we don't know if Bo Nix is healthy. Okay, we don't know if Bo Nix is that good.
Right, there's that too, yeah.
Right, well, there's that. But like, if he comes back and it's like, well, he's doing the defense and Peyton's running the show and making him look better, we don't know if he's even going to be able to be capable of that. So it's very tricky. And I guess in those circumstances, it's very comforting to have Josh Allen. Because you know Josh Allen is Josh Allen. Even Lamar Jackson, he's always hurt. You know, Mahomes is coming back from injury. You have a big, healthy, in his prime, Josh Allen, and that is going to cover up for a lot of potential ills.
So you mentioned the Texans as kind of the leader in the clubhouse right now in terms of, you know, preseason rankings. We were discussing whether the Ravens should also be considered and lumped into this conversation of teams with the most pressure because, I mean, they've kind of been in the same conversation the Bills do in the regular season, can't get it done in the playoffs. I was of the mind that I don't really lump them in, and it's largely because of how people view Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen, right, wrong, indifferent, and for whatever people's motivations are, whatever. Where do you stand on this Ravens team as they head into, I think, a really important season for them with a new head coach? And by the way, some drama this offseason with the whole Max Crosby thing and how teams are viewing their front office, so on and so forth. But yeah, Ravens, talk to me.
I think the overall pressure is high. Now, of course, they change coaches too, and Jesse Minter is not going to be held that accountable in year one for these things. Eric DaCosta might. Because of the Max Crosby trade and things like that. So the general manager might be under pressure. Lamar Jackson is always in this weird nether region where, you know, he has to get his contract renegotiated, and the Ravens seem to be trying to do it, and he doesn't seem to care one way or the other. So there's a weird element to that. So I would say the pressure between those two teams is pretty similar right now, but it's hard to say who individually is under pressure. Okay, the head coaches are safe. The quarterbacks are going to make money no matter what. It becomes more of a matter of you know, rank and file guys on the team. Will the team get blown up? One thing about the Ravens is I think their roster got a little more blown up than the Bills roster did this year. Yeah. And I don't know how that equates to pressure. On the one hand, the new guys might have a chance to be like, well, you guys are new. If you're Derrick Henry or somebody like that, you might be looking at saying, this is your last year. It's the end of the line if you can't get it done in 2026.
Where are we finding all your best stuff? I know you're over on the Blue Sky. Good for you for taking the plunge. I admire you. I can't seem to quit the habit, so I'm still stuck in the mud. Is that where we got to look you up here, Two Deep Zone? How do we find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Blue Sky at Mike Tenier. And then the Two Deep Zone is now on Ghost. I'm not going to give you the URL because it's long and strange. Look up Too Deep Zone, T-O-O, Deep Zone, like a Cure album, not like the defense. It's Too Deep. And then look up Ghost, because that's where you'll find it. Had to move from Substack for similar reasons. That's why I moved from X to Blue Sky. But it's the Too Deep Zone Ghost newsletter. Check it out. I'll be really revving into high gear in a week or two with training camp previews by the middle of July.
Thanks a lot for the time, Mike. We always enjoy it. Good luck with all that, and we'll hope to reconnect real soon.
Absolutely. Take care and enjoy what's left of your summer.
We will. Come on, it just started.
I know. We can talk. Summer. Yeah,
get him back. Yeah. What? Left of my summer. We live in Buffalo, dude. It was like snowing in May. I mean, what are you, the rest of our summer?
I know. It's weird to say, but yeah. He's not rough.
Mike Tenier. All right, there you go. Love the visit. Drops a Cure reference.
I was going to say, man, that guy knows his audience.
It's all good. Yeah. All right, we'll hit up a timeout and, sink our teeth further into the Bills conversation we've been having most of the day so far. And Houston, I want to talk about that. We've talked to Aaron Schatz about it. We just talked to Mike Tenier about it. Let's talk to Nate Geary about it. He's in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
Hour number two, Derek Kramer here with you. Where it might be warmer in the studios than it is outside. And Joe's nodding in agreement. We're in a tough place right now. But that's okay. You want to know why? Because anything could be better when we go to the Western Hotline and we talk with Carl Jones, News 4 WIVB in Buffalo. Carl, it's been a minute. It's good to hear from you again, my man. And, that was not an enjoyable game last night to watch on the pitch.
Not at all. It's crazy how I'm telling everybody and their mama, their aunties, brothers, like, listen, lock in tonight. I know I'm not the soccer guy, but I promise you we're going to put on for the world tonight. Whole world don't like us right now. Let's do it. And then I get some text messages like 7 minutes in talking about some, why you want to waste my night. I'm sorry.
Hey, you know, we all try to be bold with a call every now and then, and you know what? Sometimes that's what happens. But Carl, obviously, you know, with that, a lot of casual fans might, you know, start turning off the dial on the World Cup. So it starts to get to, hey, maybe we need to adjust to football mode. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, why not talk to Carl Jones? Because Carl knows ball. Carl, of course, covering the Bills here with Channel 4. And there's a lot of mystery, though, with this team still, Carl, in terms of what will this defense look like? How excited should we be getting about a team that, well, we know what their floor is. They're at least a double-digit win program that will get into the playoffs, and then the real questions begin from there.
I think those are all fascinating questions, and as a fan, I think that's where the intrigue should come in to a certain extent, because if you want to go on the defensive side of the ball where you say, hey, new defensive coordinator, what would look different than Sean McDermott, I'm kind of getting around to a point where the first month and a half, it may be a little rocky, and it's not because I think Jim Leonard is, like, not a good coach or anything like that, but you look at the schedule, you got some pretty good quarterbacks up front in that part of the schedule. And then also, I look back at probably the brightest defensive mind in the sport right now, Mike McDonald, who dominated – for the Seattle Seahawks this year. Think about when he first became the DC in Baltimore a few years back, I believe in 2023. That defense, the first 9 weeks, was putrid. And then he goes to Seattle. The Bills went to Seattle, and they disrespected that Seahawks defense. But then the second half of the year, they are much better. If Jim Leonard follows that same model, may struggle a little bit. He may see what pitches he can and can't get away with in the big seat. Remember, he hasn't been in this role at the National Football League level. So that's just one of the many things that I'm fascinated to see how it shakes out. But the closer I get to the season, I see that kind of pathway for the Bills defense.
All right. So not a bad idea then to pitch a little bit of patience to the fan base there, because there might still be an adjustment period for a new system, especially with, you know, whatever holdovers are from the defense. It's not going to be the same. There are going to be some different things. Terminology is one thing, of course, and also assignments are going to be different based on positional – structures. So, Carl, have you, like, as a player at Syracuse, did you ever have to deal with a coaching change or a scheme change like that?
Yes, I did. Lost my defensive coordinator late in the year in college, and ours was midseason, so it was more so about just streamlining the process of, like, listen, hey, we are going to dump everything down and just major in two or three things as opposed to try to have a minor in 10, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it like this. My freshman year, I came in with a new staff, and a lot of my guys in the room with me, one of the previous staff, and they were trying to teach their system to the guys who are already there and things of that nature. I think the hardest process is just genuinely trying to get coaches who are teachers who can teach the material on a whiteboard and translate it to Sundays, because we all learn differently. This isn't just football. This is just life. We've all been in classes where one kid is best when the teacher's on the whiteboard. One kid is best when the teacher just gives them packets and they just go to work. And I think that's also the hardest adjustment for coaches as well, because you don't really know these players yet. How does Christian Benford learn and grasp information compared to Max Harrison and then IGB and then Terrell Bernard? And you go down the line of players. So for me, that's the biggest adjustment, because it took us a while for coaches to understand, okay, listen, this isn't getting through to this thick kid's skull. How can I figure this out? That, for me, was one of the biggest adjustments I saw at Syracuse.
Yeah, and so with that sort of transition with how things might, you know, possibly struggle out of the gate, because you mentioned the fact that the Bills are going to play some quality quarterbacks to start the year as well, it could be one of those things where all of a sudden, hey, maybe relying on a Josh Allen-led defense is a pretty good thing to have, though, in your pocket when it comes to a defensive transition.
Oh, man. You talking to the choir right here. You know me. I love my defensive football. I'll just say this. You look, and I don't want to just talk about, I think Jeremy talks about this every year. You don't want to have too much of a magnifying glass on just the Super Bowl participants. But I do think it's a good microcosm of where the league is trending. You know, I will say probably from post-Legion of Boom, the Broncos Super Bowl in 2015, up until like 2022, the offense was always on the forehand. They were punching first and defenses were reacting. Well, I think over the last 2 or 3 years, it's been the inverse. Think about that Chiefs Super Bowl where they put Kyle Shanahan in the locker. Think about what the Eagles did to Patrick Mahomes, and then obviously the Seattle Seahawks. I think that we're in a sort of an era now where defenses are now not counterpunchers no more. They're taking the fight to quarterbacks. And I think it'll be super beneficial for someone like Josh to match his energy in that regard. Because, listen, we know Josh is going to throw haymakers. They can try to, you know, make him Clark Kent all he wants. Every time they get to the postseason, he take that cape out and he try to go to work. If you have someone on the other side that can match your energy, I think that goes a long way in the postseason when you are playing the best teams, the best coaches, and the best well-rounded groups. So, I mean, listen, you go down the line of the best defense in football last year, I think maybe two of them make the playoffs, and the big reason one of them didn't is because Shedeur Sanders was the quarterback.
So the other thing there, Carl, you mentioned like the trends that kind of are changing a little bit in terms of what's in the forefront. I think that is something to look into because of the fact that what do we always talk about? It seems every offseason with the Bills. What is the thing that has been letting them down? The general manager even says it a couple years ago. It's the defense. The defense has been the problem. And one of the biggest questions that we're going to have that we will not get an answer to until January, of course, is, well, how will this defense perform in the postseason? Because of the fact that over the past couple of years, you mentioned how Super Bowls are being won, and it makes me remember how the Bills have been exiting postseasons. Averaging almost 30 points against per game.
Yeah, I think about the postseason, especially in the AFC, it's a little different than the NFC because the NFC doesn't have the high-quality quarterbacks, but they have the much more well-rounded rosters. But in the AFC, you're going up against the cyborg quarterbacks, and I don't care if it's Tom Brady or Tim Couch, pressure gets to all of them. And I believe that Jim Leonard is going to set a higher floor in terms of pressure packages just based off of the belief scheme he's going to bring to the table. Inherently, with the more multiple look of 3-4, you are going to increase your volatility up front, just based off of having five down structures, right? Five-man structures. But that doesn't mean the ceiling is going to get any higher either, and I do want to make that distinction as well. Are there going to be games in, like, I don't know, week 9 where they rack up, like, 8 sacks? I think that's a very high possibility, you know? Like, you can really feast on some of those poor offensive lines. I'll call my shot right now. Either the Jets or the Dolphins is going to have one of those games where it's like, holy cow, that quarterback, he needs to lead a game. Like, I truly believe that's the type of floor you can have with this system. The problem is, once we get to January, the other team has good coaches too. The other team has good offensive linemen too. What is usually the X factor with that? Having dudes. So I think if you are the Bills, you're going to need an Ed Oliver to take another step this year. You're going to need a Deion Walker to take that next step. Maybe Bradley Chubb taps back into the fountain of youth and he becomes that guy. Or T.J. Parker comes out the gate and he says, excuse me, I should have been a first-round pick. So I think, yes, like we talked about earlier with the floor and ceiling, I think the Bills' pass rush is going to be improved in terms of how bad it can look at times. I still don't know, as you just mentioned earlier, though, how good that's going to be in January, because that's about more about the Jimmys and Joes at that point.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the most frustrating things is that my biggest question, we're still half a year away from this. So we'll deal with that when it gets there. But, Carl, you mentioned, though, the pass rush, and that is one of the things that does go silent every postseason. Jerry Hughes is the last pass rusher or pure defensive end that had a sack in the playoffs for the Bills. So it is going to be something where you do mention it's also about the guys on the field, and you look at it, Bradley Chubb and a T.J. Parker, and really a revitalization and reconstruction of the pass rushing group there in Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, point blank period. I look at, and I'm going to go down the list of teams right now that made things shake last year in the postseason. The Seattle Seahawks, they had two All-Pros in the interior, well, one All-Pro, and then they had another rising superstar right next to him, a top 10 pick. And then on the edge, they had a litany of dudes who either just got paid or they're pretty darn good players, right? We know what the Houston Texans have. You know what the New England Patriots have in spine of their defense with their two defensive tackles. You know what the LA Rams had last year. Like, I can go down the line of teams who made things happen. And if there's a through line between guys who can get after the quarterback, it may not even just be the edge position, because I mean, look at the Seahawks, like I just mentioned, their two best players were in the interior. Same thing with the New England Patriots. But as long as you just need that one ace, that one player, when every single time the defense breaks the huddle, the offense goes, where is he going? We need to make sure we either slide to him or have to account for him every single possession. That's no different than on defense when, all right, we break in the huddle, where is Jamar Chase? Okay, where is Drake London? Okay, where is Justin Jefferson? The same thing counts for offense. You need, like I remember this quote in college, you need players that make coaches work 30 minutes more every night because they need to figure out how to slow them down. And as you just mentioned, since Jerry Hughes, the Bills really haven't had that guy where offensive line coaches are like, he's going up to the head coach like, hey, yeah, I still don't have an idea how we're going to slow this cat down. They need that guy.
They need that guy, and it's been a problem for them for years. But hopefully with a reset locker room in terms of the pass rushers, the roster, and everything like that, there could be something there. But, Carl, it isn't just that. We've heard Sean McDermott say it for years, and it's probably still one of the quotes that will hang in my head forever. Your pass rush needs to be married to its secondary coverage. The Bills did have to do a lot of work there, too, because of the fact that, you know, the injuries kind of decimate them in the postseason. Denver goes after two reserves and gets two touchdowns on two plays. So they rework the depth. Brandon Bean drafts Igbinosin in the second round, noting that their depth had been targeted, their depth has been a problem, and they go and grab a player like IGB to hopefully shore that up. Safety is still a question mark. I mean, will C.J. Gardner-Johnson be a great compliment there for Cole Bishop? There's still a lot of questions in the secondary, but at the very least, they brought some talent in to try to answer that.
I'm actually pretty bullish on the Bills secondary, to be quite frank with you. Some of it is a little bit of maybe too much optimism because I played the position, but we're not going to address that, right?
Well, it's why I turned to you about the secondary, Carl. Exactly. You know your stuff.
I'll say this, though. Bills fans who have been clamoring for years, actually the ESPN list just came out today where coaches, executives, and scouts ranked cornerbacks, right? Yep. Christian Benford wasn't in the top 10, nor was he in the receiving votes category. Bills fans who have been clamoring for Benford to get his attention, this is the type of scheme where cornerbacks are given the limelight to shine. if they do play more man coverage this upcoming season, which I assume they do, will they play at the rate that they did in Denver? No, that would be ludicrous. Patrick Sertan does not live in Buffalo. But if they do, let's say, increase the rate by 6-7%, those are 6-7% more opportunities for Christian Benford to be on an island one-on-one. And those are opportunities for him to maybe show you guys, or show the world, excuse me, hey, I got more in my tool belt than just being a guy who can just live in my 1-11 zone over here. And then I think about a Max Harrison who may not be a one-to-one fit in terms of his skill set for a man-heavy scheme. However, I think about the best coaches I've ever been around. If they see a player with an S-tier trait, like Max Harrison's ability to take the ball away, it's elite. You saw it last season. Jim Leonard will find a way to make sure that that doesn't slip through the cracks, and he'll accentuate that. So maybe, hey, on one side we're playing press man coverage. Max, you can play off. We'll let you get away with certain things. You got to earn that trust, right? Maybe that's built through St. John Fisher. Maybe that is built through the film that they saw last year as a rookie and even dating back to college. And then Cole Bishop, I think, is the one that I got the most optimism for. Last year in Denver, and I actually watched Talanoa Hufanga a lot because I loved his time during the San Francisco 49ers. He plays football the right way, a.k.a. just run through someone's face over and over again. They lined him up everywhere. I mean, he was like their joker. He was lining up at the edge. He was lining up in the deep middle. He was lining up in the robber position. He was everywhere. And I think about Cole Bishop. Towards the back half of last year, the light started to come on, right? The confidence started to get a little greater. Think back to that Chiefs game, how many plays he made on different positions in the field. I think, oh, man, Jim Leonard probably is right now, 11-16, on this beautiful Tuesday, trying to draw up ways to make Cole Bishop pop off this year. So those are like the three guys that I've really got my eye on heading into St. John Fisher.
I mean, it's kind of funny that the Bills do, when it comes to defensive schemes, go from, you know, a guy who played safety to a guy who played safety. So maybe that will help the development continue there with Cole Bishop and how things are going to go there, because of the fact that you have a guy that, in Jim Leonard, who played in the league. He played even here in Buffalo in particular. And then you pair that, though, with another athletic profile, though, in C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Wherever he goes, he's not there for long, but he does have a tendency to make some plays.
Yeah, that's probably the most fascinating move of the offseason for me personally. Yes, getting D.J. Moore probably helped the team better in terms of the win-loss column. Acquiring a pretty talented edge rusher and Bradley Chubb goes a long way as well. But what C.J. Gardner-Johnson signifies in two ways is it means a lot to me. One, the locker room. I'm sure you guys have talked about it ad nauseum on this platform. I have as well. But then two, his play on the field is also a tad different than what we've seen in Orchard Park recently as well. He's more of a risk taker, for better and worse. There are going to be times where he makes a play and you're like, yo, the instincts look great. There are going to be times where the brown bird poops on his head, a.k.a. the football goes over his head, and you're like, buddy, what are we doing here? But I think you just take that, but you live with that as a coach because you see the upside on the other end of it. You're not going to always have these cookie-cutter players who are going to live inside the whiteboard, right? You're going to need some guys who think they're Picasso, even though they might draw like Carl Jones in second grade. Sometimes they might paint the Mona Lisa. You never know. And I think that's where C.J. Gardner-Johnson comes into play as a player because, listen, there are some years where he's racked up 5-6 interceptions, and then those same years the team is like, yeah, we don't want you back. But I think, listen, if you win enough games, who cares about the longevity in certain situations?
Okay, Carl, can you say that analogy again, though, with C.J. Gardner-Johnson when things go wrong? What was that analogy you just said?
Yeah, I got you. I had I'm bringing out all the football stuff that I heard back in the day. Sometimes you need a player who, you know, he thinks he Mona Lisa. You know, he drawing things up. He's showing his artistic freedoms out there on the field. He ain't necessarily doing his assignment, but he's painting a beautiful picture in his brain. But then other times, he's also drawing like a fifth grader. And I think that you have to live with the blessings and the curses of that player like that, because if you get the player who's just going to be safe all the time, you're not getting Mona Lisa ever. You may not get the terrible drawing either, but, like, we're chasing upside here as coaches.
I heard something about bird pooping on head, and I immediately turned to my producer, Joe Callie, who we've had arguments about how that's allegedly a good luck charm. So I wanted to derail the segment for a moment just to make fun of that.
No, that means just the football is going over your head. That is the worst thing as a defensive back in football. We don't want that to poop on our head. We don't.
We don't want the poop on our head, Joe. So, Carl, you mentioned DJ Moore, though, and I'm glad that that got brought up, though, too, because that is kind of the high-profile addition for this Bills team. You said that, you know, this might be the player that helps out the most with wins and losses. It also kind of helps quell a little bit of the chatter of how this team has not made a major addition in the wide receiver room for a couple of years. But DJ Moore is one of those incredibly talented players, and yet his last season in Chicago was kind of a disappointment, and it shows why the Bears are ready to move on. But it has more to do with the youth movement, I think, than it does Moore's talent himself.
The Chicago one, I think there are so many layers to it that are both unfair and then justified to DJ Moore. On one hand, listen, he was in a Ben Johnson offense, one of the brightest young minds in the sport, and it didn't work out. So you can put that as an indictment on DJ Moore. How did it work out for Luther Burden and Colston Loveland in the back half of the year, but not you? But then you can also say, like you just mentioned, DJ Moore wasn't bad. He just didn't live up to the price tag of being the highest paid receiver in that room. Those are two different conversations, especially with two really, really darn good and promising young receivers in the room. So how much do you put that on DJ Moore, considering they also have an inconsistent young quarterback back there, no matter how good Ben Johnson is? So that's one way to look at it. But then you also can pull the, well, listen, he now has the best quarterback he's ever played with in Josh Allen. That will only help out. I tend to believe the quality of quarterback only helps out like the bottom of the roster guys. The really good receivers make things shake regardless, in my opinion. Having said that, though, I think that DJ Moore is going to – I don't – because the Bills' offense has already been top five the last 2 years without that type of player, right? So I don't want to say he's going to make or break the offense. But I think those players that we talked about defensively, those X factors, those guys who are game changers, DJ Moore may not be that. But his presence may be the difference from McMillan picking that pass off in the playoffs and DJ Moore catching it. It may not be this substantial 1,300-yard all-pro season, but it may be a player where on key third-down situations, certain situations in the wild card divisional, maybe even beyond in the postseason, where it's like his presence alone impacted the players on the field.
Carl Jones, WIVB News 4 Buffalo, here on the Wester Hotline for another couple minutes. Carl, though, I looked back, though, on DJ Moore's playoff games with the Chicago Bears, and he's got a touchdown in each of them, 50 yards at least in each of those games as well. So it does seem like, hey, there's plenty of big playability here for the Bills, and you mentioned it. It might be the difference when it comes to having that player with the game on the line. Can you come up with the big moment? And that is something that the Bills have lacked outside of the player in the pocket for the last couple of years.
For sure. And I know that, listen, you bring up really good Bills wide receivers in the postseason, they'd be like, well, we had Steph Diggs and they didn't work out in that department too. So for all the Bills fans who are listening right now and say, hey, we had Diggs and didn't work out, I hear you. And DJ Moore has been a pretty darn good playoff performer. I'll leave it at that. But I think that is valid, though. I mean, in the postseason, it's all about the margins, right? I mean, you're rarely blowing these teams out in the postseason. That's just not happening. And it's going to be these moments. It's going to be individual plays that may not show 80 yards, right? But it's going to be that key 17-yard third-down conversion that ices the game. It's going to be that key 8-yard catch to extend the drive, to make sure the drive goes on and we go on to kick a field goal later on and that 3 points ends up winning us the game. And when you have players who can make those individual moments, that's how you go further in the postseason. You think about with the Seattle Seahawks last year, Jackson Smith and Jigba was a bad boy, but they also had Rashid Shaheed returning punts, making those plays in those moments. They also had Cooper Kupp getting key third downs. I just think about when you have those guys who can take that next step in that moment where things get a little tight, get a little tense, is a beautiful thing.
Carl, did you see the piece with Sean Payton and Seth Wickersham?
I have not seen it, but I've seen excerpts from people on Twitter.
All right. So calling a fake punt on 4th and 11 at your own 38 in overtime, I really wish he did it.
Man, that's a, I'm not gonna lie, that's mad disrespectful to even think about that. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, listen, the disrespect to try to pull that off as a grown man, as a national, but I'll say this about Sean Payton. Ain't he the same dude that came out of halftime and kicked off an onside kick in a Super Bowl? This dude, now listen, 4th-and-11 fake punt may be a little crazier on a crazy scale, but he wired different, man. We didn't heard. I mean, he'd been suspended for a whole season before. He wired a little different.
He's a little different, but I looked at the screenshot for the play, and I'm like, what is he thinking? I wish you ran it. But, like, to see, like, the excerpt from Wickersham, it's like, I'm mad at the players for checking out of that thing. I wouldn't be. I saw what the Bills are lining up in. You would need a teleportation spell at best in order to get through that.
Like I said, man, Sean Payton is a different dude for better and worse. You know, he might talk about Russell Wilson in a way that's not right. He may get, you know, come to Denver and they win a lot of games to start. I don't know. I just know that I've been on God's green earth 28 years and ain't too many dudes with a personality like Sean Payton.
That is true. He is something else, that is to say the least. Carl, I appreciate catching up with you, man, and talking some ball because it's always a good time. But in case people don't know where to find you, well, let them know.
Yeah, y'all can find me on Jones11 underscore on X or Twitter, whatever the kids are calling these days. Also, got a podcast, Mafia Huddle. You can find it anywhere you're looking for your podcast. And if you just want some relief from what our men's soccer team did last night, please keep listening to this show. Derek got you.
Hey, appreciate it, Carl. Always good to talk to you. And, hey, the closer we get to training camp, I'd imagine the more we'll be able to talk and shoot the stuff around.
Yeah, about a real American football. Appreciate you.
There we go. Carl Jones, WIVB in Buffalo on the West Sarah Hotline. We'll take a timeout. Come on back here. Carl brought it up. No Bills corners this time on that top 10 ranking as well. And yet, the Bills were rated the 4th best roster on paper on the same website. So what are the Bills? How talented are they really? Well, let's talk about it a little bit more coming up next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR.
He crosses it in, knocked away by Mazraoui. Mario heads it back in. Doué able to find Mbappe through traffic.
That guy's insane. Mbappe. The World Cup continues. Owen's furious because I'm naming Corey Crawford nicknames in the break. One of them is Crow My Goodness. Not a nickname.
So bad.
Hockey Reference needs to remove that. It's not a nickname. That's like a goal, or it's like a save call.
Maybe. And even that, I would really maybe have a hard time with not making fun of the play-by-play guy.
Someone must have done it at some point.
That has to be where it's from.
It's listed here.
I know Patrick Kane doesn't call him Crow My Crawford, so, you know.
Right. Corey Crawford. Anyways, all right, World Cup. Quarterfinals have already begun. Nick Mendola now on the Western Hotline. Before we get to the quarters, Nick, good morning, by the way. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning.
The U.S. fallout a few days later. I think the thing I want to ask you more than anything is, are you surprised that Pulisic has gotten as much criticism as he has gotten? Because it's a lot.
No, because we're a scapegoating country. And I don't want to say he earned a bit of it, because that's the wrong way. I think he was trying very hard to win the World Cup. But, you know, I understand a lot of it. And he also has a, I don't want to say a prickly, but he has an odd personality. And I think that some people at best socially awkward, which I totally relate to. And I think over time that he's maybe rubbed people a little bit the wrong way, and he's been easy to scapegoat. And I mean, I read an entire book on scapegoating, and I understand why it happens biologically.
Yeah.
So no, not surprised, sadly.
I guess the one thing that I was more taken aback by anything is that you had former players, U.S. program players,
yes,
and on both sides, like, right, like Carly Lloyd, Landon Donovan, Like, if you know, Nick Wright is making a comment about it, like, whatever, I'm expecting that to happen.
Sure, right.
But when Landon Donovan and Carly Lloyd were doing it, I guess that's what was more, you know, surprising in for me.
Well, just never forget that the old guard has their own, I guess, I don't want to say druthers, but there's a pride level there that gets lost over time because they went to the 2002 quarterfinals. And in Pulisic's documentary, or I guess it was the U.S. documentary. Remember, they were talking about the 2022 World Cup, and both him and Timothy Weah came out and said, you know, why are these guys coming after us? It's kind of embarrassing over the criticism that they get from pundits and analysts who used to be on the national team. And I think Landon Donovan has a long memory, as we've seen with what he said about Klinsmann cutting him from the team, et cetera. And so he, it doesn't surprise me that some of those guys are like, oh, you don't like being criticized when you're doing well. Well, you just did poorly. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's human nature, sadly. You don't have to like it, but I totally understand that part.
Right. Moving on to the games that we will now see or that we saw yesterday into the corners. How I want to start on the Egypt-Argentina result from the other day. The comeback there, Egypt being so furious and whatever they're doing after the game was over. But, man, Nick, like, Messi at 39 years old still being this good. Like, I think he already was considered the best ever. But is there really a precedent in that sport for a guy at this age still being this good? Or even, like, some version of good to what they had been? Because I feel like, you know, Ronaldo was playing at 41. But how many guys are still playing this well into their late 30s?
So what I would say is certainly not as an attacker. Now, I didn't see the end of Pelé's career, but I can tell you, and Argentina is built to give him freedom to roam, right? Like, this is all designed for Messi to still be able to do as well as he can do at his age. But I've never seen anything like it. When we talk about player primes, this is one of the things I love because there's a connection between soccer and my first love, hockey. Right. You know, you get to 28 to 32 and we're talking about, do we give you another contract right. If you're not, you know, a big oaf defenseman and that's gone away, or defender, or goalies play a long time. Attackers, this doesn't happen. Right. It just doesn't happen. There isn't a way to protect players without adapting your whole team, which was Argentina does. Like, the Patrick Kane discussion looms here for me. Oh, you can use him on your power play and you'll get a lot out of them, and you know, we'll see what happens 5-on-5. That there isn't that in soccer. Barely that in soccer. And Argentina, to their credit, but he's doing it at Inter Miami as well. And yes, MLS is certainly a second tier league, but this is unbelievable. And it actually, what Messi's doing for me is taking the GOAT debate and making me wonder if it isn't insulting because I think he's in the, you know, the discussion with him should be, let's talk GOAT of GOATs, right? Let's talk, bring your GOATs out, bring your LeBron Jordan debates, your Messi Ronaldo debates. Messi's going to walk away from that. Like, there's just no question there. And I want to talk about him as one of the greatest creators and artists of all time.
Yeah. Beyond sports, even. Right.
Like, beyond sports. Yes. Like, he is a, you go to watch him do his thing better than anything else. And I honestly mean this, the people who don't watch soccer tune in and go, yeah, I get it.
Like, right.
They watch. Yeah, I get it. It's, you go to, you go to the Sistine Chapel, right. And you're not an art person and you're not a religious person, but you're like, oh yeah, that's 3D art on the ceiling of a building from hundreds of years ago. I get it.
Yeah. So with his brilliance, they have still barely clawed through our Egypt and Cabo Verde. They've not really played anybody on the elite tier yet. Do you wonder what they'll look like as a team overall if they play England in the semis, France down the road? Like, are they showing cracks that they probably won't win the whole thing?
Yeah. I don't know about probably won't win the whole thing, but certainly aren't, you know, above and beyond. I think before the tournament, a lot of people thought you could legitimately see if the bracket works out, like the odds on favorite is a France and Argentina rematch. And this time I think that of the eight teams left, you would not be surprised if – you wouldn't be shocked if any team made it through, which is kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't be surprised if seven teams made it through.
Right.
Switzerland is the one, for the record.
I was just going to ask that.
They're not good. Yeah, it's not that they're not good. It's they don't have a single player that you think in a game where our team isn't going good. I mean, it's the Pulisic argument. Hey, our team isn't going good. Who do we look to? And it's Granit Xhaka. It's not Johan Mandzambi, who's 20 years old. There just isn't a guy there where you're like, this is what we lean on when it's not going well.
Yeah. So would you then not say France is a cut above the rest right now, or would you say that?
It would be foolish not to. I think you can make arguments, but you're really stretching, right? It's when the Pats went 16-0 and you were trying to describe why that wasn't impressive. That is really kind of the status of where we're at right now. Mbappe's unbelievable. What people don't even realize with his scoring touch is that Dembele is barely behind him and just won the Player of the Year, the Ballon d'Or, for the world. Like, the world's best player and the world's top three on the same team. The goalkeeper is solid. The backs are solid. Saliba from Arsenal obviously just won the Premier League. Everybody there, and even their weaknesses, and it's a perceived weakness. They have a midfield that, I don't know, 150 nations in the world would kill for. It's just not a top 10 midfield, and whatever. Right?
Right.
Like, their weaknesses is still a strength for most of the teams in the world. They look fantastic. It's good to watch. I mean, it's a good advertisement for a sport. The only thing you would argue, Joe, is that, you know, they just did it 8 years ago. They went to the final 4 years ago. And I think there's a lot of us who are like, yeah, but maybe I want to watch Holland, or maybe I want Holland being the Netherlands aren't in it. Holland being Erling Holland, yeah. Or maybe I want to watch Spain, or maybe, you know, I just want something different. That's the only, it's Golden State Warriors. Maybe. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's not bad. Yeah, I mean they've
a few years ago. Yeah,
yeah, right. Like, during their heyday. I mean, they have the dominance they show. It is really just so impressive, and the talent that you see. Before we run out of time, I do want to get you on England and their matchup with Norway tomorrow. And they'll be missing Jarrell Kwanza. He actually had his red card extended, like the suspension added onto it. And aren't they already pretty weak back there? Like, so Norway here, it's Holland. Overall, I think you would say that England is the more talented group. But what is their look at it right now to ending this long period of not winning the World Cup?
I think it's pretty good. Harry Kane's one of the best forwards in the world. They're attacking front four now that Saka is healthy with Bellingham. The only question I have with England is, do they all show up at once? Because I think their right back position will eventually be solved. The Kwanzaa suspension, Kwanzaa's only playing because Reece James gets hurt and isn't available. And I think there's no question. I think it's questionable, and I don't want to heap a misery on a 23-year-old who just got his suspension extended. I think that there are a number of managers who wouldn't have taken Kwanzaa to the World Cup. And it's not that he's bad. He's 23, plays for Bayer Leverkusen, and is a Liverpool product. But, like, there's an argument that this team, the flashy people would have said, why isn't Trent Alexander-Arnold here? And then the answer would be because he doesn't defend at this level. He defends. And then other people would say, then just bring Kyle Walker. Like, getting to Jarrell Kwanzaa might have been the one surprise of the tournament. And to the extent that people are like, well, just play Declan Rice there, even though he's a midfielder. It's the you're very familiar with this. You lived this with Liverpool last year ago. So the Kwanzaa absence isn't as much of a big deal. If Reece James can go, it's an upgrade of the highest order. So I actually think England still have a chance. I just continue to think they live in this Leafs world where you look at their roster and you say, that's as good as anyone's out there. But there's just some sort of pressure. There's some sort of underperformance gnome that lives on their team bus and follows them around.
Right. You are literally speaking a debate that I lived with Alexander Arnold and Kwanzaa and others like 2 years ago, like every single week. And he did, right, Alexander Arnold not even getting taken.
Don't we have that, Joe? I mean, to me, Trent Alexander Arnold is an outlier. There's an element of, to me, there's an element of Tage Thompson to him. He does things attack wise. that you would not imagine other people being capable of doing. Even the sheer whip on his free kicks. But guess what? He's not tracking back in playoff games.
Right. I don't know if you like this comparison. When he was at Liverpool, what I always thought of him was, this is Erik Karlsson. Like, he is incredible, and I've got to always make excuses for his value when it comes to, well, he's not a very good defender. I'm like, well, whatever. Look what he's making up for that, and then tenfold by what he's doing on the first half of the pitch.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a definition of the hold on, let him cook. He's made this huge mistake. It was it's the same feeling I get. It's not the same player, but it's the feeling I would get when James Cook would fumble and McDermott wouldn't put him back in.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's look, good. That sucked, dude. And he'll do that sometimes.
Right.
But he can also run 70 yards. Like, give me Ray Davis in lesser doses.
Right.
I'm totally with you. Trent Alexander-Arnold is one of the most creative players to ever play a game. There's a reason that 95% of people wanted him to become a Pirlo, a holding midfielder. But Jurgen Klopp, who is a genius, just kept putting him at right back, and more times than not, it worked. But when it didn't, it looked awful.
Yeah. Well, he's not available to England. They play tomorrow at 5 against Norway. They will have to do without him because he's not on the squad. FC Buffalo is not till next week, right, in the playoffs?
The playoffs aren't till next week, but next week. I've been pretty open about this, and it's worked because it's important to be vulnerable. It's real hard running a minor league soccer team. So we have a home game on Saturday. Our players, we have so many local guys. I've mentioned Ali Alamari from Lackawanna, but also Jack Root from Buffalo, Ashton Gell from Lancaster, Zach Venuto from Buffalo. And so we're encouraging people to come on out Saturday at 3 p.m. It's not going to get in the way too much of your World Cup fun. Mm-hmm. Come out to Coyer Field, pay a couple bucks, watch a great group of players averaging 3 goals a game, and help us because we're going on the road for at least a week. And so come on out. Help a small group get over the line and hopefully become a bigger group.
Make tomorrow a soccer marathon. Go see FC Buffalo at 3 o'clock, then go watch the Norway-England game a couple hours after, and then go watch Argentina-Switzerland. Perfect.
That's what I'll be doing. All day soccer. It's not a surprise, but that's what I'll be doing.
Right. Thanks, Nick, again.
Anytime, guys.
Nick Mendola, NBC Soccer. The World Cup continues today at 3 o'clock. Spain and Belgium will have World Cup of Joe in the 9 o'clock hour. Got some football to talk about with Marcus Mosher as well. And your phone calls at 803-0550 here on WGR.